Welcome to the Washington AI Network live from CES, the largest technology show in the world. We're here in Las Vegas. I'm Tammy Haddad, bringing you some incredible information from amazing innovators. And my guest now is Caroline Pham. She is the former acting chief of the U.S. Commodity Futures and Trading Commission. She was also a commissioner there. She helped oversee America's derivatives and digital assets markets, crypto, and financial innovation. Now she's taken that experience to MoonPay, a company building the payments and infrastructure layer that connects consumers to the crypto economy around the world. Caroline has seen this issue from both sides, inside government, where rules are written and enforced, and inside industry, where those rules are either workable or not. Caroline Pham, welcome to the Washington AI Network podcast. I am so thrilled, Caroline, to have you here. First of all, congratulations on the new job at MoonPay. We're sad that you're back in New York, but it's great to see you here at CES.
Thank you so much. It's really exciting to have helped to make America the crypto capital of the world all last year and execute a big win on crypto for the administration. And I'm super excited to be part of building the future.
So I got to take you back because the Genius Act, which you played a critical role in getting through, has changed everything. Explain why. And then I'm going to talk about the market structure legislation that you're still working on.
Of course. So I'm excited to talk about payment stablecoins under the Genius Act in two different important use cases. So last year, when I was acting chairman at the CFTC, what was really important about getting the Genius Act across is that it created a clear regulatory regime for stablecoin issuers and to define what payment stablecoins are. And that's because what I've often said is the killer app for stablecoins is actually collateral management. If you think about it, the CFTC oversees the $700 trillion gross notional global derivatives market. That includes tens of trillions of dollars of collateral that's moving every day.
That's money. When you say collateral, you mean money.
That is real money. So when you are using that kind of size and that volume, a lot of times that is happening either in U.S. treasuries or in U.S. Treasury money market funds. But now you have stablecoins, which are also invested in U.S. treasuries, as almost this new container around U.S. treasuries. So it is just a way to make programmable, smart value systems in our global derivatives market. So that was very exciting about the Genius Act there. The other thing I'm super excited about with the Genius Act getting implemented this year by the bank regulators is in my new role at MoonPay. MoonPay is a global value network that seamlessly brings together crypto, fiat systems, and consumers. So you can buy or sell your crypto, you can convert it to cash, you can convert crypto to crypto. It's really a way to get plugged into the new digital economy with smarter money.
Does it replace a regular bank?
So what's interesting about MoonPay is that MoonPay is really an infrastructure partner. So we would partner with banks, with brokers, with other financial institutions, with exchanges, with vendors, because we provide a regulated, compliant layer in order to do things like on-ramps, crypto deposits, crypto wallets, stablecoins, and stablecoin issuance. So really, you can think of it as almost helping to build the next PayPal of crypto.
But it's safe. I mean, the thing about MoonPay and these payment systems is they're considered as safe as a bank.
Right.
An old-fashioned bank, I should be clear.
Right, because if you look at the licenses that we have...
Wait, so you have to be licensed?
We do have licenses, many licenses. So what was exciting that MoonPay built last year before I joined, of course, but they got their BIT license from New York. They also have the New York Department of Financial Services Trust Company Charter. And they have all of the money transmitter licenses throughout the United States, all 50 states, and in many, many countries overseas, because MoonPay has over 30 million customer accounts.
Wow.
And has customers in over 180 countries.
So are those regular people? Are they governments or everyone?
So MoonPay has both consumers and businesses as customers. But what's really exciting about this next phase of growth for MoonPay, and what I'm particularly excited to do, is to scale MoonPay in a compliant, responsible way, really focused on enterprises and bringing our value on chain to more and more of our partners. So for example, yesterday it was very exciting that MoonPay announced that Rumble launched Rumble Wallet, for their creators to be paid directly in crypto from fans who want to tip them. And that's being powered with Rumble Wallet, powered by Tether, and MoonPay is actually what is providing all of that.
So it's like a system. It can be integrated anywhere.
Exactly.
What about stablecoins? Are you guys going to do stablecoins?
So stablecoins is a very exciting next stage of growth for us as well. Key acquisitions were made in 2025. And so we are really seeing MoonPay as a way to do branded stablecoin issuance. Just the same way you have branded credit cards, you can now have your own branded stablecoins. And again, this is where we will partner with not only brands and with companies, with businesses, with banks, really people who want to issue stablecoins and are looking at stablecoins as a service.
So if we or Taylor Swift, same kind of operation, wanted to come to MoonPay and say, we want to launch an AI network stablecoin, how would that work?
That is part of our growth plan, is that we will be able to abstract away all of the compliance layers, all of the nuts and bolts of how it works, the operations, and issue that stablecoin for you. And you'll be able to have your fans seamlessly be able to interact with you using your Washington AI network stablecoin.
Oh, well, that's going to make it really simple for everyone.
That's great, because I think this is what people are realizing with the regulatory clarity from 2025, Genius Act, of course, but also important guidance done by both the SEC and the CFTC last year. We are now reaching that next phase. In 2026, we're going to see institutional adoption, but we're also going to see adoption of digital money at scale. And what's really important about it is as this sector starts to mature, you're going to start to see consolidation, and you're going to start to see people really focusing on also differentiation. And the way to do that, as always, it's not just product market fit, of course, but it's user experience. So I think people who are able to just make everything easy, people don't want to really think about how things work on the back end. You know, all of your favorite apps, they just work. You know, when your phone just works. And that's what we're looking to do, is that's the next phase for crypto and digital money, is it just works.
Could it end up on my Apple Wallet?
Yeah, absolutely. I have MoonPay installed on my phone, and it's actually incredibly easy to use.
But I mean, my stablecoin will be there too.
Yes, your stablecoin would be in your MoonPay wallet.
Okay, good. Oh, I like that. But then you can add other things in. So what about like Europe and the rest of the world? Will they be able to use your products the same? I mean, can Europe make their own, you know, say France make their own stablecoin using MoonPay?
Yes, exactly.
So you're going to sell to government too?
Well, I don't know about government. I've not been involved in those. It is week two for me.
Okay.
Of being in the office or here in Las Vegas. But what's exciting about it is, again, think about it as really a infrastructure partner. So we are providing the systems, the platform, the licenses, and the operations for people to then connect to that and use that. It's like white labeling technology, right? When you have a technology system and then you want to white label it to somebody who wants to use it and put sort of their own branding on it, have their own portal for it, for their own customers and own that customer relationship. But really it's powered underneath by that technology vendor. So it's the same thing with MoonPay.
All right. So what about your old friends at Citibank? You were at Citibank a long time. Aren't you taking business away from them?
I don't think so. I think what you're seeing is you're actually increasing the opportunities, again, for partnerships and also to address other customers and other clients who might not be Citi customers, but who might want to be able to access people through integrations and partnerships with MoonPay. So again, if you just think about how PayPal works or how Stripe is connected to different merchants, right? PayPal works together with the banks. And I do think that you're going to see a lot of different kinds of stablecoins. And so how are you going to be able to exchange from one stablecoin into another stablecoin? That's something that MoonPay provides as a service.
Oh, wait. So you can switch from one to the other.
Right.
Will people track it? Like, you know, on CNBC and Bloomberg, they now have Bitcoin. They have the numbers in the corner. Will we start seeing all different kinds of stable coins and people will be tracking all of it? So say on your phone, on your MoonPay, you can move your money from one stable coin to another stable coin.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. So what is exciting about what stable coins do and how it really creates programmable smart money, money that's built for the internet? And I know we're probably going to get into agentic AI and how
yes.
that's. And so we'll be going there next. But I think one way for people to think about stablecoins is that just the same way that you get rewards points with your different travel programs. So let's say you have your hotel points, you have your airline miles, and you can exchange between the two, right? You could transfer and convert your hotel points to airline miles if you wanted to, and vice versa, right? So it's the same thing with stablecoins. Just imagine that you go to Starbucks and Starbucks has its own stablecoin. Let's say that they replace the Starbucks card with their own stablecoin. But then you have a balance there and you decide, well, you know what, actually, I'd love to go use it at Apple, right? To convert it over for Apple. And again, people are used to that from thinking about like gift cards, right?
Right.
But no, you could just exchange it over into that. So it is really a way of more seamlessly transferring value from different networks. So that way, actually, what you get is an interconnected layer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go to agentic, because it is the most exciting thing. It's the most exciting thing at CES people are talking about, and the idea that you don't have to do each step individually. But my biggest fear is on the financial side, because you're going to let an AI use your financial information to book this, book that. How are you looking at that?
So I think it's really important that there are strong standards that are being developed by the industry, by all of the biggest AI developers, to work on having ethical AI frameworks, for example. So when I was at Citi, I worked on Citi's first ethical AI framework and on AI governance and risk governance across the firm. And so just like any other new and developing area of technology, you want to consider what the risks are and what the protections are. And just because it's a different kind of technology doesn't mean that those protections go away, right? Things should be technology neutral. If your data is supposed to be private and protected, it doesn't matter whether your data is written down on a piece of paper or it's stored in a computer or it's stored on a blockchain. It should be private no matter what.
So you're saying it's really no difference than your financial information in your wallet now.
Right.
It should be that way. But you see how people are afraid, because no one can really tell you how AI works, right? It just like, it's in the box. It just happens.
Yeah. And that's why some of the key aspects of AI and when you are using and developing and deploying AI is that you want to have explainability. You want to understand what information is the AI collecting and using and explain how the AI works. People have looked at the use of AI's credit underwriting, for example. And so when AI is running essentially a very sophisticated credit model to do underwriting, like, you know, are you going to get a mortgage and at what rate are you going to get a mortgage, or are you going to get a credit card and what's your credit limit going to be? Making sure that that's explainable and that there aren't any biases that might be disadvantaging people.
Will there be standards for that?
So when we're talking about financial services, all of the existing rules apply in financial services. So one of the things about regulating AI that I think is really key to think about is there's probably two main regulatory approaches that I think are appropriate. So when we are thinking about managing the risks of AI, so generally speaking, for financial institutions, you think about financial and non-financial risks. Financial risks are like credit risk and market risk. Non-financial risks are things like operational risk, legal risk. And so what's great about risk governance frameworks is that they're principles-based and they're flexible. So no matter what activity you're doing, you are supposed to make sure that those risks are identified, that they're measured, that you have limits and ways to control those risks. Those risks are getting reported to management. You have a risk appetite. So it is already a holistic risk governance framework that fits any use or deployment of technology. And then, you know, I have firsthand experience with that, of course, working at a big bank and deploying AI and looking at digital assets and blockchain across both institutional and consumer businesses. But when we think about other types of regulations, so in particular, conduct regulations. So these are regulations to make sure that there's adequate disclosures, that there aren't misconduct, that conflicts of interest are addressed, and so on. I do think it is more appropriate to take a more prescriptive approach. So specify what kinds of disclosures. Like, for example, one area where people are considering and developing AI for is like robo-advising. and using AI to kind of create profiles and dashboards for clients and sort of what is their investment risk appetite and what have they said are their preferences and maybe historically what kinds of trades have they done and that kind of thing. I think it should be very clearly disclosed to customers that there is AI being used by their, you know, robo-advisor, for example. Right. And so you really understand, again, like you said, it's your data, you own it. It's your information. You know, privacy is very important. And so you should know if AI is using it.
Okay. Let's go back to your Washington days.
Thank you.
The market structure, legislation, where does all of that stand?
So what we did last year, so we started off with the president's executive order just on day three of the administration, launched the president's working group on digital asset markets, charged this group with issuing recommendations in a report, which was really the U.S. crypto roadmap. And that was done at the end of July, I think July 30th. And then immediately thereafter, on July 31st, the SEC launched Project Crypto. And on August 1st, I launched at the CFTC the Crypto Sprint. And I think really the heavy lifting was done with that President's Working Group report, you know, the White House crypto report, because it really told the agencies to not wait any longer. America has already fallen behind. So many American companies have set up overseas affiliates because of the lack of regulatory clarity in the United States. And then, of course, non-US companies found it so prohibitive to try to enter the US market. So really, time was of the essence. So use the existing authorities that we have to go ahead and provide that regulatory clarity so people have some comfort. And they're able to invest, hire, and build in America. America's back, right? Everybody should be able to come home, and we should have all our innovators and all our entrepreneurs back here, back home. So one key aspect of it, and it was maybe not explicitly one of the recommendations, but of course, starting again from day one in January, ending regulation by enforcement. There was a policy that the DOJ had put out that there was going to be no more regulation by prosecution. For the most part, digital asset cases were not going to be brought if it did not involve like fraud or harm. So really making sure that we do things in the right order. Do the rules first. People should know what the rules are and then bring the enforcement actions against them. So that was a huge piece of it. So the SEC on their end and what the CFTC did is we started right off the bat by doing a joint chairman statement. And then we also did a joint staff statement. And then we announced a joint roundtable on regulatory harmonization, because of course, one of the unfortunate things that happened over the last couple of years is there was this turf war. And because there was a turf war between the two agencies, people didn't know, you know, am I regulated by the SEC or am I regulated by the CFTC? It's not clear to me. But by coming together and putting out a statement that said, yes, each of our registered entities can do non-security crypto assets. So non-security crypto assets could be Bitcoin, it could be Ether, it could be these protocol or network tokens, you know, utility tokens. It could be all of those things. There's going to be a pathway to do that in a legal and compliant and regulated way. And we're going to tell you how to do that. So I think a tremendous amount of work has been done over on the SEC side of things. They issued a token taxonomy. So now people can know whether or not their token is a security or not a security. They've also issued no action letters and other guidance to make clear that certain specific use cases, those tokens are not going to be securities. So one of the very first no action letters that the SEC did in the blockchain and digital assets space was, I think, in maybe 2019. And that said that essentially a private rewards program, you know, just sort of like these same customer rewards programs that we were talking about earlier, that if you use tokens for that, that was not a security. And so I think being able to continue to build on that is super important. And so that's going to help with a lot of the innovators, because I really think like where a lot of this comes down to is on these protocol or network tokens, because in order to build all these networks and have all the benefits of blockchain technology, and you include that with modernizing payments, with using agentic AI to automate so many different things that we will be doing in our lives, you do need the protocol tokens to power them. You literally burn or you consume those protocol tokens to make the network work. So for example, the Ether token powers the Ethereum network and they call it gas. Well, if you think about it that way, that it's energy, or that it's consumable that you need to use in order to power something else, well, that clearly becomes something that's not a security and that does typically fall into the CFTC's jurisdiction as a commodity.
You need to put this all in a book. These are all these terms and things people don't know.
Thank you so much. And so I think that's actually one of the biggest things, because people want to build these incredible networks and be able to take advantage of programmable smart money. But if you are sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, I might be a security and I'm going to have an SEC enforcement action, I mean, that could be game over for you before you even get started. So that really chilled a lot of the innovation that was happening in the United States. Or, you know, a lot of things that I worked on when I was at Citi was with actual corporate clients. Mm-hmm. And so think about if you are a big brand, like if you're, you know, Nike. And, you know, Nike had NFTs, right? You know, I didn't work on that project, but you could imagine that if you're a big brand and you're doing NFTs and you're doing other kinds of tokens and you think the SEC could come after you and you're a public company, well, you know, that is something right. that also could be right there so damaging for the company, for shareholder value. And so you're going to not do that activity. So I think the next stage really that we're going to see with digital assets and blockchain technology and tokenization is actually in the commercial space. Think about all of the different applications in media and entertainment with fan engagement, customer engagement, enhancing sort of your experience if you're going to the movie theater, or maybe if you are streaming at home, fandoms, if you think about sports, and if you think about, again, just how we have these very passionate communities that have built up around a brand or an artist, that kind of engagement can be owned directly by that brand or by that artist with blockchain networks and with tokens and NFTs.
So, yeah. All right. So you're saying that, again, Taylor, let's just use Taylor Swift, right? You don't have to partner with someone else. You don't have to go to Nike or someone else. It could be your stable coin, or it can be, I don't know, it could be anything, right? Because then the blockchain will let you just do what you want.
That's right. And it makes it so that
it's almost like Shopify. When Shopify came in and people talk about the Kardashians and all these folks that were in retail were able to sell directly and then they got all the money themselves. They didn't need to go to someone else.
Exactly. So I think instead of having these sort of closed networks where you have to go to a platform, that platform owns the relationship with the customer. You, the artist, the creator, the brand are one step removed. Mm-hmm. We are seeing with blockchain technology things being really more direct, like direct to customer, right? Or direct to consumer, peer to peer, that kind of thing. So, what I really think is the promise of Web3, right? So, this is like the next generation of the internet built on blockchain technology, is that. And look, you know, we are in the creator economy. We're in the gig economy. We're in the creator economy. Every single person is going to be able to be their own creator with a bank and a network and, you know, consumers or fans, all accessible through decentralized applications that are running on blockchain technology that you interface with through your smartphone or maybe through wearables or other technology, your smart home, what we're seeing, what they're doing with cars. I mean, I think it's going to be really about the individual relationship where that's being owned by, again, the creator, the brand, the artist. It is an economy that is built peer-to-peer, built on the individual and having those connections. So it's going to be just fascinating because it is a complete paradigm shift. It's not the way that we think about things now, right? We think about Facebook, we think about Instagram, we think about these platforms. So what if each individual person is their own platform? It is so interesting, right? So to me, I'm kind of like, it's almost like you take like TikTok plus Etsy plus TaskRabbit plus PayPal, you know, plus Amazon, and you just make that all in one, and you can access it through your own, again, decentralized application, and it's something that you own and that engagement that you own and that you can monetize. I think that's also going to pair up with other mega trends like microfinance. And so I think these are going to be some really interesting things that we have to think about what the new digital economy really looks like.
And when you say that, it makes me think of time saved.
Mm, yeah.
If it's all in one, I'm going to be rich. Thank you very much. And it's going to be my money. I don't have to share it. But also, I think about the amount of time you save if it's all coming through this one path and it belongs to me.
Yeah. So one of the things that was very cool about being here at CES is, of course, there's a big presence with creators, with artists, and you're able to do some interesting things with the blockchain technology powered with digital money. So, for example, having stronger intellectual property protections around your content. So, again, with agentic AI, with the blockchain technology, with digital money like stablecoins, maybe people want to pay per stream. But you want to make sure that like people aren't pirating your stream or your content. And so all of that can be automated. And so you could be getting paid for what you made. That provides protection around the IP. But of course, basically, I'm describing a way to collect royalties.
Right.
So it's also a way to sort of modernize royalties. There's so many different cash flows in everything that we do. And so to be able to have an instant audit trail, to be able to prove, like think about all the receipts that you carry around, right? Well, the blockchain is one giant receipt.
Right.
So it is just fascinating how this is going to change really how we live, work, and play.
I have to say, you have outlined and really shown us what the future looks like. All the financial digital matters. Actually, I feel pretty excited about that. I'm going to be rich. I'm going to own it all. And it's going to be beautiful.
Your smart fridge is going to be able to figure out what's in your fridge, pay for the order by itself.
Right.
Have it delivered by the robot that brings your groceries from the depot or the store where it's coming from. I mean, I saw a little food delivery robot this week at CES. And
a lot of robots here.
Really incredible.
Well, thank you so much, Caroline Pham. Thank you so much. We miss you in Washington. Thank you for your work for the U.S. government. I thank you on behalf of the American people and all taxpayers. And good luck at MoonPay. And thank you so much for being with us here at CES and on the Washington AI Network.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us at CES. We're excited to be here. Thank you to the Consumer Technology Association for having us here. We look forward to seeing you all back in Washington, D.C. I'm Tammy Haddad. Thanks for listening.